The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Welcome to the Ask the Experts show, where the experts offer you educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
And welcome to Ask the Experts. I'm Laura Lewis, filling in for Lee Richards today. And with us, workers' comp insurance attorney Michael Cardamone. Hey, welcome.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I am fine. How are you doing in this coronavirus crisis?
Doing fine. We're surviving and still busy, so everything's been good on our end.
And of course, some things never change, and that is workman's comp. And so you've been on the show many times, I know that. And I think this week that we wanted to get into one of the key aspects of a court case, and that is testimony.
Yes, testimony is, when you narrow everything down, testimony is the key to basically to winning your case on the claimant side. And I think the same can be said for defense counsel on their end of things. Your testimony is really what the judges zone in on when they're deciding a case. They'll have the transcripts of the injured worker and usually two different doctors. So testimony is pretty much where these cases get decided.
Okay, well, let's back it up then. So they're looking at documents. I always think of testimony as actually in court swearing and that you will tell the truth and speaking. So what actually is testimony?
Well, testimony is basically a sworn statement. So you can have two different types. You can have written testimony, which normally comes in the form of an affidavit, but more frequently it's oral. So you'll have a deposition, which is testimony outside of the courtroom, usually in the attorney's offices with the court reporter, the witness, and the attorneys. And then you can have testimony live in the courtroom before the workers' compensation judge. So in our cases, Laura, what we normally do is at the outset of litigation, we'll take the deposition of the injured worker, and then after that, at the end of the case, if it doesn't settle, we'll present the injured worker for testimony before the judge in the courtroom, although in the last couple months it's been via telephone. But in the normal circumstances outside of a pandemic, we'll present them live in the courtroom. And that way the judge can make a credibility determination by seeing them live.
Well, talk about the deposition process. Who's going to make the deposition?
So if we schedule it, and normally we do for the injured worker because that's our client, of course, so we'll schedule a deposition, and basically we have to get the other attorney on board with the same date and the same time, the injured worker, of course, and then we'll have a stenographer, a court reporter come in, and they'll be in the office as well, and they'll take everything down. They put it into a transcript. And then we give that transcript to the judge as part of our evidence, or sometimes we just upload it to them on our portal. So it's normally two attorneys, the injured worker and the court reporter. Now, if it's a different witness, then things change, of course. If it's a doctor, and we usually go to the doctor's office to take their deposition at where their practice is. So in that case, it would be the doctor, the two attorneys, and the court reporter.
Are those the parties that usually would testify?
Yes. In most cases, Laura, we have three witnesses. Not always, but in the garden variety case, you'll have the claimant testify at some point, again, either by deposition and or in the courtroom at the end of a particular petition. And then we'll have our doctor, you know, the treating physician for the injured worker, and then normally the independent medical doctor will testify on behalf of the employer or insurance carrier. There are other situations where there could be other witnesses. For example, there could be an employer witness who wants to dispute something that the claimant said about maybe their job duties or, you know, something along the lines of when they gave notice and what they said about reporting the injury. In other cases, you can have a vocational expert involved. If there's an allegation that our client has an earning power and there's what's called a labor market survey completed, then the vocational expert will testify about all their findings. So there can be more than the three witnesses, but in most cases you have the claimant and then two doctors.
How long does it usually take?
That can really vary. I mean, you can have testimony that can literally take 1 minute if it's a really short, discrete issue. Or, for example, if you were presenting somebody for rebuttal and you just had to kind of go over one point to clear something up, it could be really quick. On the other hand, you can have testimony that can go, 1 to 2 hours. So sometimes, I've had doctors' depositions that have been about 3 hours long. That's not the typical one. Most of the time it's between 1 and 2 hours, but it really varies depending on a lot of factors. You know, how many issues are involved in the claim, basically the style of the attorneys. That's an important factor. Some defense attorneys want to turn over every stone possible, and that can be exhausting for a witness. And other attorneys kind of get right to the point, and they have a checklist of things they want to hit, and then they're finished. So it really varies from a few minutes up to several hours. If I had to give an estimate, the average would probably be about 45 minutes, though, in terms of the injured worker testifying. It's usually in that ballpark.
You just mentioned that you'd have two attorneys in the room at the same time, and I can just imagine one of them is Perry Mason. So you talked about rebuttal too. So they are grilling at this time?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have direct examination, which is, so if I schedule a deposition of a witness, I will go first. It's called direct examination. And that's generally a friendlier type of format because you're on the same team, so to speak. When I'm finished with my questions, the other attorney representing the insurance carrier and the employer, they get a turn. And so that's called cross-examination. And that's where things tend to get a little bit more heated up. Not always. It's never usually a personal thing, but things can get testy much more frequently on cross-examination than direct. And then if we want to come back after cross-exam, we can then present redirect examination to kind of clear up something that was elicited on cross-exam. So it can go back and forth, sort of like a ping pong match, where sometimes the attorneys want to get the last word in. And so you can see it going back and forth, and it can be exhausting for a witness. The doctors, they do not like that kind of a thing. But, they have busy schedules, and if the attorneys are going back and forth too much, sometimes you'll see them, rolling their eyes and looking at their watch, kind of giving you some body language like, hey, we got to get to a conclusion here.
So when this is happening, though, now, obviously, if it's in a courtroom, the judge is watching this and let's allude to Perry Mason again and say, you're overruled and bang the gavel. But what happens in a deposition? I mean, is anyone there playing referee?
No, and that's a great question. So here's how that works. In the beginning of a deposition, we will go over the standard rules, which basically say, counsel, do you agree that all objections and the reasons for the objections must be placed on the record? Otherwise, they are waived, and the judge will rule upon them at a later point if they're properly preserved. So if you boil that down into layman's terms, what that means is the parties are agreeing there's no referee at the deposition. So if you have an objection, you place it on the record and your reason. For example, maybe it's hearsay or maybe it's question was asked and answered, something like that. And then the judge will rule upon it later as it gets closer to the time of the decision. The parties will have to submit their argument on each of the objections, cite which page it came up on in terms of the transcript. And then the judge will rule on them before the decision in the case is issued. So it is an interesting dynamic. As you said, in the courtroom, you have the judge making on-the-spot decisions about whether somebody can answer something or whether something has to be stricken from the record. In the deposition, there isn't that check and balance. So you can get a lot more out of a witness. You can preserve your objection, but sometimes what's the saying, the cat's out of the bag or something along those lines, where, your witness may have already kind of said some damaging things. And although the judge can overrule or sustain an objection in that regard, they're still going to see in the transcript what was said. So, you have more constraints in the courtroom. And if you're really nervous about a particular issue, sometimes, the courtroom is the better place to draw out that testimony.
Does that rattle the witness? I mean, how do they recover from something like that, especially if they have to answer in anticipation of it later being struck, but they have to go forward? Is that your worst nightmare?
Yeah, it can be. I mean, it also depends on the demeanor of your witness. Some people are very calm and poised in a courtroom. They're not easily rattled. And other people are, they can barely talk. Their nerves have gotten a hold of them. So, part of it really depends on the situation and the person's, personality and their comfort level. So I like the deposition setting. I like the leeway that it allows. And other people, they prefer the courtroom side of things. And sometimes you need both of them in a case. So it really just depends on, the situation.
You can't pick, obviously, how do you know whether, I'm phrasing this poorly, but you know what I'm about to ask. How do you know somebody can actually testify?
Well, that's a judgment call. We prepare our clients ahead of time. And, if it's a doctor as our witness, we'll meet with them 30 to 45 minutes early, whatever they can allow, and go over the issues. Of course, we can't tell them what to say, but we can go over the issues and tell them what questions they'll be asked, make sure they reviewed certain records so they have foundation for their opinions or their testimony. But you really don't know exactly until the moment of, because you can't always tell. There are some people that rise to the occasion and they're not rattled at all, and other people are a mess. And so it's a judgment call, but I try to prepare people enough so that they are not surprised about the questions they'll be asked. But on the other hand, don't over prepare them to the point where they kind of sound rehearsed. Sometimes you have a witness who will hear an attorney or maybe hear a legal show on TV, and they start answering, not to my recollection, not to my recollection. And they start sounding like an attorney, and you don't want that. You want someone to be natural and honest, of course, that goes without saying. But so there's sort of this fine line between preparing someone a little bit, make sure they're comfortable with what's coming their way, but not overdo it as well.
Do you ever practice?
Oh, yes. And again, really depends on the personality involved. Some people, I can tell they're going to be fine without really any kind of practice. But for the most part, I try to run through the questions that either I'm going to ask and anticipating the ones that the other attorney will ask as well. And the practice can be really helpful. One of the things where a lot of people go astray is they tend to ramble. And, testimony is very, trying to think of the right word. It's very rigid and not like a normal conversation where people are jumping in and talking over each other. It's question, answer, question, answer. And so a lot of people tend to answer more than what they're asked. And so that takes a little bit of discipline and a certain kind of practice, as you said, to sort of get the feel of it. And sometimes people just get the feel of it on the fly in the courtroom. Once they settle in, they realize, okay, I'm just answering one question at a time. The whole story will come out. It might be a little painful and take a while, but when I'm asked what my job duty is, I don't have to get into the date of injury and who I told and what my symptoms are. Those things will come out sort of one by one.
Just answer the question. And, oh, and you know
exactly.
What? Right. And we'll have a lot more questions for you when we return to Ask the Experts.
The Cardamone Law Firm is an extremely rare law firm that dedicates 100% of its practice to the strong representation of injured workers under the Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Act. Attorney Michael Cardamone is an outstanding work injury lawyer with 5 convenient offices throughout Pennsylvania from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh and will make home visits upon request. Attorney Michael Cardamone has been recognized by the Best Attorneys of America, Super Lawyers, Top 100 in Pennsylvania, and has a perfect 10 out of 10 rating on Avvo. Attorney Cardamone brings his fighting spirit to each and every case he works on to safeguard the rights of people injured at work. The firm possesses the skill, experience, and resources necessary to go head-to-head with any defense firm or employer. Cardamone Law has defeated dozens of multi-million dollar companies. Call Cardamone Law 7 days a week at 215-206-9068 for a free and comprehensive consult. That's 215-206-9068 or go to cardamonelaw.com.
And welcome back to Ask the Experts. And today we are talking to workers' comp insurance attorney Michael Cardamone. I'm Laura Lewis, filling in for Lee Richards. And let's get back into, and I said just answer the question. Can a witness just mess up so badly that the judge is going, I don't believe a word the guy is saying?
Yes, they can, but they're not going to externalize it. In other words, you don't hear the judges at these hearings when they're hearing testimony blurt out comments about, I'm not finding you credible or that's not credible. Normally, you might see the witness squirm and the attorney squirm and try to rehab something that kind of goes astray, but the judges keep their opinions to themselves, and where you see their opinions is in the decision itself. So if a case doesn't resolve, you end up getting a written decision by the workers' comp judge at the end of the case and after the written arguments are submitted and everything. And in that decision, they'll have to make a credibility determination about each witness. They find them credible or not credible, and here's why. And they have to support their statement with some of the facts and their observation of a witness with their body language or whatever. So you don't tend to see the judge blurt out comments about credibility. They can rule on objections. They can give us our deadlines for evidence, things like that, but they're not going to show their hand in the courtroom in terms of if they're finding somebody to be credible or not credible.
Well, the sad thing is someone who has been grievously injured is not going to always be calm and present well in this kind of a situation. So it's terrible when they can affect the judge's opinion, you know, later on. But the same thing goes, though, for the witnesses against your case. Can you present them badly in your cross?
You can. That's a great point that you make, Laura, because I've had clients, many of them, and most of these, you know, injured workers are credible, and the judges will find most of them credible. But there are so many occasions where somebody's, they're so worked up about it that they end up having these sort of fragmented answers, and then they're thinking out loud, and then they change a date, and their mind is going so fast that they're having trouble communicating. And that can come off to some people, and it's a perception thing, that can come off as sort of somebody who's, you know, maybe doesn't have their story straight or things like that. And meanwhile, what's happening is they're just a deer in the headlights. They're just sort of frozen, and they can't articulate themselves the way they normally would. And so the perception can be that they're just not telling it, you know, straight. So that's a really good point. I've had... clients who struggled with that. And I could tell that the perception from the other attorney and the judge was like, you know, they're just trying to be slick here. And they're not. I mean, I know some of the clients better than some of my, you know, relatives. You spend a year or two, sometimes more, with your clients and with a lot of phone calls and meetings and hearings. And so you really get to know them well. And you can tell that people are sincere or not, but sometimes they get tripped up in the courtroom. And yes, that can happen on the other end of things too, where the you see a defense witness who you can kind of tell they're, you know, they're a good person, you know, they do their job the best they can, but they're getting really rattled. So on a personal level, you can sort of feel this, feel a little bit of sorrow for them. But on the other hand, you have a job to do, and that's to represent your client zealously and to do the best you can to win your case. So you kind of have to separate out your personal, you know, feelings for them that they're getting beat up, and the fact that you have to try to win. So that's a tricky situation.
You mentioned to getting rattled and maybe changing dates, because heck, I can't tell you what I had for breakfast yesterday. I would probably correct myself, you know, what kind of swallow in Monty Python, you know. Can a witness have notes when they are testifying? Can they get, you know, maybe nonverbal clue, you know, cues from someone with them? And can they have somebody with them when they're testifying?
Let me sort this out a little bit. So in terms of can a witness have notes or documents with them when they're testifying? Yes. To qualify that, though, we would have to present a copy of that to the other attorney. And you could redact out anything that's privileged or, you know, anything that has to do with legal strategy or confidentiality. But as long as you present a copy to the other side, your witness is able to use that. And it's really, really, really helpful. So many people, I will tell, please keep notes of this, especially early in a case. And did you call out using the proper protocol, you know, in the employee handbook? And did you do this? And what did they say when they called you? And did you leave a voicemail? What did you say? Because a lot of these details matter. And a lot of people just think, I'll remember it. I know what's going on. I'll remember it. And 6 months later, they're asked questions about these things, and they didn't take notes, you can see their mind wandering. May not reflect in the transcript, but the judge will be looking at them and seeing them rolling their eyes and trying to recapture all these details. It's much different when someone has notes that they took themselves contemporaneously at or near the time of the event itself in their own writing. I mean, that lends so much more credibility to the details. When somebody's like, yes, I have a date here of January, you know, 2nd, 2020, and I left a message for so-and-so. And so taking notes can be pivotal. The problem is most people don't do it, whether it's just a lack of discipline or they just think they're going to remember it or they forget. It's probably 20% of people who are able to, you know, do that daily, kind of keep a notebook, who they talked to, what they said. So can they have a person to rely on in the courtroom? No. And some people, if they don't know the answer to a question, you'll see their eyes kind of wander to a spouse or sometimes even us, the attorneys. And it just doesn't look good. And it's not because they want somebody to tell them what to say. They're sort of just lost in the moment. And they don't remember that it's perfectly fine to just say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with the answer, I don't know, or I don't recall, I'm doing the best I can, or I'm estimating something. So a lot of people think they kind of have to give this concrete answer to everything, but it's not so much a test of memory in these cases. It's a matter of credibility, and that can underscore or highlight your credibility if you're just able to admit certain things that you don't remember. When all of us are, you know, like you said, I don't remember what I ate last night for dinner. So you know, when you're asked about, you know, did you hurt your back before? And, you know, when was it? And people are like, you know, they're floundering like, oh my God, I don't remember when that accident was. But you can see that they're trying their best to give you the right answer.
Hey, we're at the two-minute warning here. What is the takeaway from this when someone is coming into you and when you know that testimony is going to be involved?
Takeaway really is consistency. So what I mean by that is you want to look at all the records. Make sure that, you know, if somebody had a prior back injury and now they have a back injury from work, that they admit it, that it's not going to hurt their case. An aggravation of a prior condition is a work injury. But a lot of people will think to themselves, oh, I'm not going to mention that. It's going to open a can of worms, and I know I recovered from it, so I'm just not going to bother. All the records will come out in these cases. So when there's testimony involved, the key is consistency and reminding your client and reviewing their medical records to be able to spot things to jog their memory so that when they're asked about prior injuries, you know, you can refresh their memory about it and things like that. So the key with testimony is, one, being honest, of course, but also consistency. And that kind of takes some rigor and some work ahead of time to review all the records.
So taking notes and being consistent.
Very important. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's other things, too, like, you know, make sure you look the judge in the eye sometimes so they can see that you're being straightforward. Don't be combative with anybody. Just answer the questions, things like that. But yeah, so there's a host of things that go into it, but consistency is really probably the number one thing.
And well, thank you. Thank you, sir, for joining us today. Attorney Michael Cardamone has been our guest today. Workers' Comp Insurance attorney. And of course, you can reach him at cardonelaw.com. Call him at 215-206-9068. Thank you for being on today.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate the opportunity.
And we'll be right back with more of Ask the Experts.
Thanks for listening to the Ask the Experts show today. Join us again next week for more specialists in their field of legal health, financial, and home improvement.